you're listening to Generation Dry, a podcast for the sober and sober curious. I'm Natalie.
And I'm Kayla. Let's get started.
And today we have an exciting guest with us, Sarah Wood. I am not going to describe her for you guys because she's an absolute like piece of art. Honestly, she went from like making oatmeal for other people into being this like amazing joy soldier for others. So Sarah, do you want to give yourself kind of a background to introduce to our listeners so that they can get to know you a little bit?
Totally. Hi, everyone. My name is Sarah, and I'm a writer. I live in Barcelona, and I stopped drinking. Well, it's actually my sober anniversary, or my non-drinking anniversary, was this last Sunday. So exactly 1 year. Which is so beautiful. And I think I've been so reflective, like, on that day. I love on birthdays and holidays and things like that. I'm actually an introvert, even though I'm very chatty, but so I locked myself by myself and just really thought so much about what stopping drinking gave me. So I'm so excited for this conversation, and thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we are too. I'm super curious. So you mentioned that this past weekend was the anniversary. Was it a year anniversary, 2 year anniversary? How long have we been living alcohol free?
It says 1 year. So I think of myself as just this little baby. And, you know, I think so many people say, I've heard it said that, like, you know, like your brain stops when you start drinking, or like all those things, which I don't necessarily believe, but what I do strongly believe is that this evolution of my life has actually been quite a regression in the way that I am much more similar to my nature when I was 8 years old than I was at 18. And I do think that stopping drinking has helped me tap into that like fountain of creativity that I think I silenced in the way that you do when you're in adolescence and you want to fit in. And I think drinking is a part of that, but I also think, you know, just dressing, and I'm from the Midwest. I totally was raised in the culture of people pleasing. And
I think, oh my God.
Yeah, where are you from, girl?
I'm from Michigan. And where are you from?
Cool. Natalie, I'm from literally the wonderful state of Illinois, Chicago, but I went to UW-Madison. So
I knew I loved you immediately. I went to Michigan. So
that's so exciting. A Wolverine. Love it.
Well, so then this we have in common, where I don't know what your experience like was in college, but at Michigan, it's a very big school around sports and alcohol, which I didn't care for either, but I learned to like them or to be in them. And I think that's where I lost a lot of agency. And I now I'm really being like, okay, everything in my life is a choice. And if you're not quitting it, you're not committing it, it's actually a choice to stay in it. And so, it's been so interesting to think about in the Midwest, where and not speaking for every Midwesterner, but definitely was raised in a place where you say yes, and you say please, and you say thank you. And really this past year has been this exploration of what I want to say no to. And where, you know, like the Midwestern goodbye, where it's like you hang around for like 20 minutes and you like never actually leave.
Yes. You're like the fourth hug in. You're like, bye. Yeah. I'll see you later, maybe. How are you again? Tell me one more time.
You know, and I don't want to live my life in a Midwestern goodbye. You know, I want to know what I know. I want to leave when I want to leave. Mm-hmm. And I left New York when I was still having fun. My grandma would always say, like, leave the party when you're still having fun. And I am starting to actually feel when it is time to leave things, when it is time to stop doing things. And in that space, I've like picked up all these things that I did when I was a kid. You know, I've like started dancing again. I started decorating my apartment. Like, I have unlocked this like love for interior design that I just never thought I had. And I started drawing, like all these things. Like I literally am an 8-year-old, you know, and it's been really cool to uncover that playfulness, because I think sometimes people think that, oh, maybe if you don't drink or you're sober, you know, that you're not fun or that you're not silly. And I just think there is like this like oozing funness, like it like oozes from my pores. So yeah, it's 1 year. And I always say like best year yet, and a lot more years to come.
No, definitely. I personally can totally relate to the whole like inner child revelation after stopping drinking. I was fun, obviously, when I drank, but like now I remember how fun I am. And I'm just like, man, I'm cool as shit. Like I want to be this young all the time. Like I want to feel this alive and this just like engaged. And like you said, the creativity, I feel like it's like a fountain. Like when you're not numbing or escaping with alcohol, I feel like at every moment you feel this sort of like push to be like, how can I literally look for fun? Like I don't just categorize fun as going out to the bar or going out, you know, drinking or having, you know, everything being centered around it. I'm now just like, let's go like have a water balloon fight. Like that's what I'm looking forward to this summer. I'm like, guys, when was the last time we had a slip and slide? Like, let's do that.
Oh my God, I love it. And I mean, I relate to it so much where I just feel so much more comfortable in my like physical body. Like I dress up, like I, you know, I feel it's like this child that's like, you know, I love dress up as a kid. So now I wear these like big outfits and have like figured out how to do like floral arrangements. Like, you know, it's like a child like took a crayon over my schedule and was like, you're going to dress up today and you're going to play with flowers and, you know, you're going to have a themed party. Like I literally feel like there's an 8-year-old running my scheduling, and it's the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, honestly.
I totally honestly agree with that. It is.
I so love fun. It.
Yeah.
It sounds like you really rediscovered yourself when you stopped drinking. And I guess, you know, I also had a similar experience with going to a party school. And really, I feel like you lose yourself quite quickly. I know you also mentioned, you know, trying to fit in, you know, trying to make connections, wanting to be part of what's going on. And also growing up in the Maryland's not really the Midwest. But a lot of the culture is the same, right? Where this, especially as women, you know, you have a place and you want to just please people. And, you know, you really want to fit in. You're not supposed to be too loud. And then you kind of, you lose yourself completely. And so I guess, you know, my question is, when did you kind of figure out that drinking was not serving you anymore?
Yeah. Cause I think, and so I probably started drinking maybe a little later than my peers. Like it wasn't until my senior year of high school. And I mean, I love my parents so much. I bet they, you know, with the best information they had, they were like, I think you should try drinking. You know, you're about to go to college, like here, try it, you know? And, then I went to Michigan and that was like totally the social norm. And
yeah.
I think what I realized is like, I was so desperate to belong. Like I did not belong to myself. And then I found places I could belong. Like I knew in my heart of hearts, like I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to wear beautiful gowns and I wanted to live in Spain. And then I went to college and I like, you know, started wearing what everyone else was wearing. I did what everyone else did. I never took a writing class. I went and to New York and worked in finance because I was like to chameleon where I was like, okay, I could go into a group and figure out like what the esteemed thing was and then go and do the esteemed thing. And I realized like I was living my life for consensus. Like I would figure out what was the thing that, you know, I was supposed to be doing and then I would go do it. And so that, and like that, I mean, it's a great skill, you know, it served me really well to get to New York, to get into communities I thought I wanted to be in. And I think I was so focused on getting these things I thought I wanted. Like I didn't look up and be like, wait, why am I doing this? And who am I doing it for? And who am I doing it with? And then, you know, COVID happened and I was still, you know, working away. I worked on the trading floor at Goldman, you know, around super smart people, really generous people. But like the culture of finance, the culture of sales, the culture of big cities, like is a lot of drinking. And, you know, I was just running myself so ragged, like literally physically, like I would wake up at 4:44 a.m. and I would go for a run and then I would go to work and be at my desk by 6 a.m. And, you know, like just this like very everything in my life was so extreme. And my drinking was extreme because that was like I did everything with utmost enthusiasm. And COVID happened and, you know, I go home and I'm like, I'm in Michigan and I'm still working a ton. And I was just like thinking like, this is so far from where I want to be. Like I had this very explicit picture of how I wanted my life to be like, where I was like, I imagine like I could feel it more than I could see it. Where I was like, I want to feel comfortable. I want to feel beautiful. I want to be around artists. Like I want to touch art, you know, like people are like touch grass. Where I was like, I know that's what I want, but I don't know how to get there. And then I went back to New York and I changed jobs and still like living in a tiny apartment in New York. And I was just like, things need to change. And so, you know, the first big change was changing a job. And then I started like these smaller changes where I like started drinking lemon water, you know, and just like, it was like tiny changes. And then like looking at the romantic relationships that I was in, that a lot of them like revolved around alcohol, you know, was dating and drinking. And honestly, it was like a breakup where we had a lot of alcohol. And it was like the last heartbreak where I was like, I'm just done. Like I need to take an actual break. I need to take a break from dating. I need to take a break from drinking and just like really strip things down and figure out what's going on. And I had started working with a nutritionist because I was in eating disorder recovery and I still am. And just like, I was just like, what? I had this like overwhelming feeling that something was wrong. And I was like, okay, let's get curious and let's stop everything and figure out like what this is. And I was like, okay, I went and I decided, okay, I'm going to stop drinking. And I had like stopped drinking before in the past, you know, like in college, I had like taken long breaks and I never thought like I didn't fit into the idea I had of someone who had an alcohol problem. Mm-hmm. But like, to look back, it's like, yeah, probably. I mean, but also that doesn't mean that only people that have the experience that is portrayed in the culture of having an alcohol problem should and could can examine their relationships to alcohol. So I took a break and I was like, okay, I'm going to see how long I can go. And I'd also read in this book called The Breakup Bootcamp that it takes 40 days to get over a breakup. And I was like, okay, perfect. 40 days. I'm going to write a poem every day. I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to date. And in those 40 days, and I think 40 is also just like a significant number just in general, like in culture and in like several religions, like 40 is such an interesting number. And so I took these 40 days of writing a poem every day. And then I just watched my life like bloom. Like it just like exploded for me where I realized I was attracting a very different type of friendship, a very different type of person. Like I was... time differently. I was writing more than I ever had in my life. And the 40 days passed and I was like, oh my God, I don't want to lose how I feel because it was closer to that person I wanted to be than I'd ever felt in my life. And I was like, okay, if this is the thing that will get me closer to that, then it's going to stay as it is. And so then after that, because I had socialized it as like, oh, you know, I'm just going to try this. And then the reality set in that, okay, I think that alcohol like, isn't going to be part of my life. And so that's when the real renegotiation began as people that had known me one way for, you know, like oh, this is Sarah, these are the social norms, like we go for drinks together, we do these things. And so it required almost a renegotiation of me in my world, you know, me to my friends, me to how I have been dating. And that was where like the real work began of just figuring out how to talk about it, how to talk about it to myself, how to forgive myself for the things that happened when I had been drinking. And really that's like those first 3 months was really just me considering, you know, what did this mean for me as a person in society and me as just, you know, the way forward. And it was really interesting. But what I knew, the thing that I knew for certain was that I did not want to lose how I felt. Like I felt so connected. I felt so in touch. I was finally like the sister I wanted to be. I was checking in on my brothers. I was, you know, a much more thoughtful friend. Like I just felt so sensitive and like so raw, it, like, which was painful sometimes, but I just felt like I was feeling again. And I was like, I just want to feel for the rest of my life. That doesn't mean I want to feel good. That doesn't mean I want to feel one way, but I just can feel in a way that I have not felt in a, like probably since I was a kid. Like I was just constantly moved. Like I was moved by music. I was moved by seeing a couple on the street. I was moved by poetry, like small moments of generosity where I was like, I feel like I can see what's happening in my life, you know? So that was like the first 3 months of it. And then I wrote an essay because as this was happening, I like was very awkward in the beginning where I didn't know how to talk about it. I was super like, I was always apologizing to people. Which it was just like so awkward, like bless my friends who were there in the beginning as I would like practice how to tell someone on a dating app that I wasn't drinking or, you know, just in general. But I started to have like those first things without alcohol, like the first party you go to, the first wedding you go to, the first date, your first kiss without alcohol, like, you know, and it was like, I'm literally like reteaching myself like a tadpole, like how to exist in society. And that's where this insight came up that we don't really have the language to explain like what this is, where when I said I didn't drink, everyone assumed it was negative or that, you know, there was something wrong with me. Before I had gotten to acceptance, like I probably was also projecting, you know, where I was like, if you say something like an apology, people are going to assume you did something wrong. And so I think once I started to accept it and started to be able to change the way that I talked about it to other people, my experience of it also changed. And I just felt much more comfortable in my own skin. And I didn't feel like I needed to explain or like provide details or make a list of grievances, you know, my 95 theses, you know, it was just like, this is who I am. And then I also moved to Spain in like September. So I lived in Spain and I was almost able to like reintroduce myself into this world as like, this is who I am. And it was all those fears you have that you're going to be like rejected or shunned. And I just felt like I was constantly proving my fears wrong. And yeah, it stuck. So that's how we got here.
I love your story and the way that specifically the detail that you said about curiosity, where you, instead of challenging it or immediately, you know, almost like giving yourself like an ultimatum and you were like, no, I'm not going to do this anymore. You kind of approached yourself with curiosity. I think so many times people approach themselves or others with challenge and it just cages you so much in your options and in your journey and your adventure that like your curiosity ultimately led you to almost like shed layers of yourself and like allow you to like feel your way into your most like radical, honest self rather than imposing strict rules on yourself and saying, oh, I'm not going to drink anymore. This is who I've become, right? Like the curiosity led you to like kind of, almost like embracing this, like an intuitive journey into embracing yourself almost. You were like, well, we're just going to see for 40 days what it's going to turn out to be. And then you felt your way into kind of like alcohol-free living, which is kind of beautiful.
Totally. And I think it's also like, I'm a very extreme person. Like, I'm very intense. Like, you know, I was like the first, I would be like, I'm vegan. And then I was like, okay, now I will figure out how to do veganism. Or I was like, oh, I'm a runner. And then I signed up for the New York Marathon, like without ever running a mile. And I did that with meditation, where I was like, meditated for 10 minutes and signed up for a Vipassana, like 10-day silent meditation. Like,
yes.
I totally was like, okay, I have to say this identity and then I will do it and I will give myself no grace around it. And this was, I think, the first thing I did softly, and I did it privately, and I did it like without these grand proclamations and promises. And it was honestly felt like the first really, I wouldn't even say it's like self-indulgent, but like this really precious thing where I was like, no, this is actually me taking care of myself. And if that makes other people uncomfortable, if that changes relationships I've had where it consisted of us getting drinks, I'm okay losing that, because this writing that I'm producing and this softness that I feel, and honestly, like this care and love for myself, like I will not step on it anymore. Mm-hmm. Like I will like offer it to other people. And it was like this tiny little precious thing. It was the first time I've ever done something softly in my life. And no, I think you're exactly right. It was totally, it started as an experiment, and it has been like the greatest experiment ever, you know, and it has taught me to experiment with other things, you know, for positive or negative, you know, just like, okay, what is my life like adding this? What is my life like subtracting this? And just like generally being more curious, instead of just being like, okay, this is where I'm going. This is the marathon that I'm running. This is how fast I need to do it. Being like, okay, I'm running. Do I like where I am? Do I like the people? Okay, I've already ran 13 miles of this. Actually, I'm going to stop and I'm going to go look for the right marathon to be running. Yeah.
You use yourself as a way to direct your choices rather than like how the outcomes or the consequences of how other people react to you make the decisions for you. You know, like I can totally relate to that when it comes to like, I'm a runner and I'm running a marathon, and you do it rather than actually like feeling your way into becoming a runner and enjoying the thing that you're doing. You do it for the basically like the reactions of others, of being like, oh, really? Wow. That's a really big undertaking. How has that made you feel? Like, I didn't even like being asked those questions, honestly. I was like, honestly, I don't know. Okay. Like, yeah. I don't know how I feel. I feel really tired and my legs feel like they're not even existent. So don't ask me. But I did it because it was almost like kind of attention grabbing in a weird way, you know? Yeah. And then when I learned to actually like stay still in my own experience of something and say, how does this thing actually make you feel? Like almost like this kind of somatic sensory experience of kind of coming into your body and being like, does this feel good? Do you like the way your body actually feels after doing this? Rather than thinking about like, oh, wow, I'm going to be so accomplished after I do that marathon. That's going to be a really great thing to put, mm-hmm. you know, my room or whatever.
It's so hard though to break that like pattern of thinking and pattern of behavior. I mean, Natalie knows I just did that with yoga. I like got really into yoga and then I was like, I'm gonna become a certified yoga trainer, even though I like work, you know, 70 hours a week and I'm doing so many other things. And then I like at the last minute I was like, all right, you know, like I'm actually not gonna do this because I don't have the time and I'm not doing it for the right reasons. Like, you know, I think it's very much this search for that external validation. And like Natalie said, you start to actually have to question yourself and go like, well, why am I really doing this? Am I doing this because I enjoy doing it? Or even yesterday I was eating a yogurt and I didn't even like it and I was like, but I need to finish it. But why? You know, like I'm just so trained that for me, the way that I was brought up, like you do something, you finish. And then having to unlearn that that's not true. Like you said, if you run half the mile or the marathon and you decide, you know what, this isn't working for me, this is not the path that I thought it was going to be, it's okay to take a step out and move on to the next thing. I think, especially in America, we have such this extremist society and it's so individualistic and, you know, success driven. And so anytime you do something and you don't follow through with it, there's like shame around it, which is it's so unhealthy.
Yeah, I think, and if I like just one point, because I was talking about this actually with a client another day about like the obsession with not only producing, but you actually being a product. Like we have this very, very big obsession with productivity as well as selling ourselves as a valuable product. And so if we do these things, right, and we do them to completion, that makes us more of a valuable product to other people in their eyes, right? Because we're, you know, reliant, we're consistent, whatever it is, right? But we can't look at ourselves as these sort of from this consumeristic lens. Like, no wonder everybody's burnt out. Like, how are we going to hold up our, you know, yeah, I give 110% in everything that I do. What's that standing on? Like, yeah. You need at least a certain percentage of like self-care and self-love and honestly, like gratitude or grace to like let that percentage of work sit on.
Totally. When I think of, like that story that we tell ourselves about like our inherent worthiness. And I think it was like, so once I again, like tiptoed around it where I started to realize that like, okay, I could not do all these things. And there are people that would love me anyway. And I would love me anyway, where it's like, you know, no one actually cares if I work in X job or if I do all these things. And it was, you almost, there was like grief because I was like, well, I've lived like X amount of years giving so much to what I thought was going to make me valuable. And then like the secret is that none of this really matters. And like, it's really this story you tell about yourself, about like your lovability, like you're being pure love, like who are you at like the essence of yourself. And I think that's where it can almost, you almost like don't want to know, like you can't unknow it, and it makes you question everything where it's like, oh, like why, you know, I think of when I was drinking and like overworking constantly, like all of those moments of misconnection, meaning like with my family and my partners and just all of those things that I didn't think that I had a choice in, where I was like, of course I'm gonna like be an amazing productive worker, contributor to society. Like, of course I want, like, I need to do all these things so that other people will esteem me. And it was like, I had to figure out that none of that actually mattered. And I think that can be like so jarring almost, where you're like, no. I did the 4-year degree and I did all the things and I, you know, look, I did everything right. And I'm so grateful that so many people now are having these conversations and are having these realizations so that you don't live your entire life in this like sunk cost of, well, you know, I spent all these years doing this, I should do a couple years more. And instead like, no, this is enough. I'm going to cut my losses. And like, I am going to start now living how I want to live tomorrow. And I definitely think it's almost like a cultural reawakening as we examine like, what does it mean and where did we get these messages from? And they actually haven't been around that long, you know, and they're also coming from the people that benefit from things being this way, you know? And so it's really interesting that this is a conversation that's being had. And yeah, I love it. I love talking about it with you too.
It honestly sounds like for you, not drinking is an act of honesty.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And this is where it was like so hard because I wanted to be like this finished presented thing of like, yeah, I am a, like, I'm sober and I'm vegan and I'm a marathon runner. And, you know, I wanted like, I did to like present a clear picture of who I was. And I think in stopping drinking, I began to see that it wasn't, I didn't actually want to fit myself into all of these different boxes and let myself just kind of like ooze into my life, you know? And so even when the conversations around sobriety and like non-drinking like can get so tactical where it's like, oh, well, like tell me, you know, how many days or like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I think I'm working so hard to not make this another achievement. Mm-hmm. And instead this just like, oh yeah, that is just in the long list of ways that I describe myself. I think of it as, you know, maybe it's like the 10th or the 12th. And I don't want it to be another thing I hold up as like a badge, but rather I want to use it in service to being the person I want to be at dinner with you when I'm a better listener. And when I, you know, am I more fun to be around and I'm, you know, more thoughtful and more pensive and, you know, all those things. I don't want sobriety to become like a wellness thing for me or another badge. I want it to just be like, this is a fact. This is like just one thing about me, and it serves the life that I have been so desperate to live that I'm finally letting myself walk in.
Yeah, it's a way of being. I think it like allows your, like, I feel like all of our, we have like all of this like vessel of like energy. I guess like I'm a very spiritual person. So for me, when I look at it, I think of our energy that we have as human beings, just these vessels of this spirit, right? And so much of our lives are predominantly lived out of our ego. Mm-hmm. And for me personally, I think when I look at my alcohol-free journey, because I'm not sober in some other ways, I feel as if though like I've actually gotten to reconnect with like my soul nature. Like it is a way of being that I feel most comfortable, like in my body, in my mind. Like sometimes I envision myself as like, so my body is obviously this sort of, you know, form that I live in, but like this spirit that exists within me, this sort of like nature of me, I want to feel like bloated of myself instead of like of other things, of other narratives of people, of other, you know, scripts basically that I'm supposed to feel. And like living that sort of journey for me has truly been like growing into myself, like feeling abundant of myself. And that's just like a way of being. Like, I love that you said, I don't want this to be another wellness thing, because I don't want it to be another thing either. Like, I don't want that to be another badge. I don't want it to be like, oh, I'm doing this cool thing. Like, no, do it intentionally and do it with like full awareness and presence of like, how is it that you are becoming yourself when you are lessening this behavior? Does it help you be more authentic?
It's a completely different narrative than I think the majority of people who are becoming alcohol free or who are sober are living. But I think it's an important narrative. Absolutely. Right. Because, you know, like you did, Sarah, you know, you experimentally, right, kind of became alcohol free. Like you had intention behind it, but my assumption is at the beginning of your 40 days, you were probably not like, oh, this is going to be my lifestyle forever. Like, you know, it was like, all right, let's see what happens. And so many people, you know, as somebody who's been working in this space for a long time, and then as somebody who's also been in recovery for a long time, I see so many people, like you said, it becomes their whole identity. Like, I'm a sober person, and everything that I do has to prioritize my sobriety, or it has to, you know, like I'm a sober influencer, or, you know, it's just, it consumes them, and they forget about all the other beautiful, amazing aspects of their personality and who they are and what they have to give to the world. And I think we do that a lot with everything, like you said, right? Like, I'm a vegan, I'm a runner, I'm a yogi, I'm whatever, especially for those of us who are, you know, perfectionists or recovering perfectionists, I found for myself, I started in like traditional recovery. So I identified as an alcoholic, and then I moved out of that and I identified as a recovering alcoholic. Then I moved completely away from that and I was just sober. And now with somebody like Natalie said, I'm not sober from other substances. I'm very open about microdosing and taking medication and also, you know, having a couple drinks in the past 6 years of my sobriety. So for me, it's not even identifying as a sober person anymore. It's just somebody who doesn't drink, like you said, and recognizing that I do it not because it's a badge. I do it not because other people have that expectation of me now, but I do it because this I've built for myself and it serves that. It allows me to wake up and meditate and go to yoga and work and be the person I want to be and focus on my mental health. Because for me, when I go back to drinking, I let other things, like you said, like being a good friend or being a good partner, or for me, especially focusing on my mental health and making sure that it's in a good place, those things kind of fall by the wayside because I get so caught up in the peer pressure and the now. And like you said, everything that we just get consumed by when we're in that moment of drinking and we forget who we really are as a person and what we really prioritize and what we really love about ourselves. And so now, and I think there's this new movement that makes people uncomfortable of young people who say, well, you know, I just don't drink. I'm not really sober. I'm not really, you know, an alcoholic or anything. I choose not to drink because it doesn't serve my purpose. And I was just reading an article about this on The Wire, or The Wired. I forget which, what it's called, but I won't say who wrote it. It was somebody who was in a traditional program and it was really just writing all about like sober influencers and this whole new wave of young people who have kind of, you know, brought sobriety to light as something that used to be so anonymous, and kind of, you know, exclusive to be something that is now inclusive and that doesn't necessarily have to have a label. And I think something that bothered me was this person's put out a tweet introducing the article and it said something like, you know, are these people really sober? Hmm. And it rubbed me such a wrong way because I was like, well, who cares? You know, what does that word really mean? Like you said, you know, sometimes we use it like, I'll say it like, yeah, I don't drink. Yeah, I'm sober. Yeah, I'm this. Yeah, I'm not. Right. Like I don't freak out if I'm at a party and I say it by accident and then correct myself. Right. But there is still, I think, a large group of people out there that hold that identity so tight-knitly that it makes people uncomfortable that there's this new wave of people who are like, yeah, you know, we're kind of like casually sober, or, you know, like I wouldn't even know how to put it, but,
it's the no label movement. Yeah.
Yes.
I think it's so interesting because, I wrote an article for The Cut where it like went viral, which was incredible. And it like elicited such emotional responses, like both positive and negative. It was about this, you know, because I felt like I couldn't find the language to describe what was happening in my life where I didn't feel like sober fit or non-drinker. I didn't think was sexy enough for like all the creativity I was feeling. And, you know, I really like stumbled around my words. And as a writer, like I want to be precise and, you know, I want to be perfect in the way that I'm talking about it. And I feel like, and I see that there can be people or like, there can be this like need to be exact. And I understand mm-hmm. that for some people like that are in recovery and that do identify as alcoholics, like they want to own that language and use that language. And I think what has been so interesting in it is when I stopped drinking, like I just felt this like overwhelming amount of love for like, I just like unlocked all this compassion in me. And I like, it breaks my heart when that like space is taken up in the limited literature, but growing about sobriety, where it comments on someone else's experience is not legitimate, when I just feel like I'm so grateful that universe, God, higher power, like brought me to what I experienced as sobriety. And so if someone gets there through Dry January, if they get there through exploring it for wellness, if they get to have access to this clarity, even briefly, and you know, they, you know, if they get to change their mind and maybe change their mind back, if it serves them for a moment and it doesn't serve them later, like I just pray that we can like loosen our need to like criticize other people for their very personal experience, you know, where I want to hear more about these stories of positivity without being like, so tell me exactly how much you were drinking. Do you like, give me this exact definition, blah, blah, blah. Where I think the way that it moves as like a growing movement in consciousness is if we can let go of that need to define and point fingers at and identify as, instead be like, okay, tell me about what this experience has given you versus tell me what label you put on it. And I think that's what I really hope, that we can all just like give more grace and let ourselves live in the grayness of a movement that is like, it is a bell curve. You know, there are people like all different experiences, all different backgrounds, all different resources, all different ways that people have stopped drinking. And that doesn't mean that someone is like better at it than someone else, you know? And so that's where I see it as like, I don't think I'm a better non-drinker than anyone, you know? And I'm just grateful that I got to on earth stop poisoning myself, you know? And so I was so afraid to talk about it. Like I was when the article went viral, I was like so grateful, but also so terrified, where I was so afraid of saying the wrong thing and offending someone. I felt like, oh, have I really earned enough time without drinking to be able to talk about this? And this woman that I admire so much, like I came to her and I was like, hey, what is like the resource I can use to make sure I never say anything wrong and I'm never ever like criticized on the internet? And she was like, you need to figure out like self-compassion and like let yourself change your mind and like let yourself know that things are constantly changing, especially in the recovery space. Like we are changing our definitions constantly, you know, we are, and that's amazing. Like if we can, as a collective, allow ourselves to change our mind and not like criticize people who said something that was true for them and it has changed, then I think we can have more honest conversations without us tiptoeing around and trying to be absolutely perfect in this thing that is so imperfect.
Absolutely.
I completely agree with you. I think it is very similar to like the idea that it's actually like almost a rebellion against what we grew up with this idea that we have to be organized and convenient to be to other people, to understand like other, we don't need to like give up our comfort to be convenient to other people in order for them to understand like our journey to where we got to today. And if like whatever that is, whatever got you to the choices that you're making right now, that is valid. And nobody should necessarily be questioning that, because that's your pursuit of happiness. Who am I to judge how you got there?
Totally. And I think the more that we can appreciate, if you come across someone who doesn't drink and really like asking the question of, oh, like what have you gained from this? Which I love that you asked that question, you know, and what has this given you? Tell me about your creativity. Tell me about like maybe how you're sleeping better, or, you know, tell me what you've gained. And then it doesn't matter how you got there, you know, and it doesn't matter the what you lost and who was hurt. And, you know, that is like, you can keep those things precious. Like, you don't need to offer an explanation to everyone. You don't need to walk on your knees. You don't, you know. And instead, if we can just see these people as how they are, like in that moment, you know, and it's like so beautiful. And I think that's because it can be, there's like a fear to be like, oh, if I stop drinking, do I like, what, like, can I, do I have to be a perfect sober person? Do I have to forever? Like, who is going to grade me? Like, you know, like, what does that mean? Like, and I think the more that we like loosen our expectations of ourselves and do what honors us and like kind of like blinders on, like stay in your lane. Like, we don't need to comment on anyone else's journey besides to celebrate them. And that's where I think we all move forward, as if we focus on choosing what serves us and celebrating what serves other people.
Absolutely. We all have the same journey to the top of the mountain. And I think everybody's journey there looks different, right? I think some of us belay, some of us have a nice little stroll. Other people have to kind of free climb. It's very jagged, you know, 80 degree wall. But I think the whole point is to just get to the top and then to help others get to the top. And it's not a competition of like, well, my journey was more difficult, like you said, or it took longer, or, you know, I suffered more. Like, why are the qualifications negative? Like, let's change the narrative and let's start talking about, well, like you said, how has your life been better since you stopped? And more importantly, and what I found was really important and has been important in my own journey, is helping other people get here in whatever way possible, and, you know, meeting them where they're at. And so really opening up the doors and making this community as inclusive as possible, because I think, you know, 10, even 5 years ago, it was not very inclusive. And so, like you said, how can we change the language? How can we open this up? How can we make this so it's not so binary and black and white? Because, you know, for every person who has that extreme disorder and who does, you know, need to work on their recovery every day and, you know, live in their truth, which is 100% valid, there's 10 other people who are in that gray area who may not necessarily need to live by a label or, you know, work on their recovery every day, and their journey isn't any less valid because they didn't, you know, hit a rock bottom. And so that's what I think we need to help people understand.
Literally, when you were talking about this, I just had like, I don't know, it was a weird little like epiphany. I was like, what if we started answering questions of why we don't drink with all of the things that we've gained, rather than the reasons of why it brought us to our knees in the first place? Mm-hmm. Like, what if I was literally like, honestly, I like am so fucking happy and I sleep 8 hours a day and I don't have black bags under my eyes. And on top of that, I have better memory and I'm so creative. Like, instead of talking about, oh, well, it ruined my relationships and X, Y, Z, like, flip the script.
Absolutely.
What? Yeah. So to every listener out there, honestly, the next time somebody asks you like why you don't drink anymore, just focus on the positives, literally all of the things that you've gained, the abundance of your life, rather than like, oh, well, I had like a really terrible relationship and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Or even I think you don't even have to wait until people ask you, like, when you question yourself, and that happens all the time. You know, I think it's not something that just happens in the beginning of your journey. When you ever feel like, oh, maybe I could have a drink, or, you know, I don't know why I'm sober anymore, or, you know, could I go back to drinking, or should I, kind of remind yourself of like, well, what are all the things that I'm grateful for that I have because I don't drink? You know, this life that I've built for myself And what would that look like if I decided to go back to drinking? You know, because I think a lot of us get to this place where we have the job we love. We have the good, we finally have the good friends, right? We are the good friend. We're loyal. We start coming into our own. And then sometimes that's when the romanticization happens of like, oh, well, you know, now that I have everything that I want, or I'm finally in a good place, I can take a step back. And then we forget, well, the reason you're there is because alcohol is not. And so just, you know, having that reminder to yourself when that little voice peaks up of just like, no, it's not about the negative. It's about what I'm gaining, what I'm benefiting from not drinking, and moving forward from there.
Totally. I love, you know, because I worked with my therapist really closely as we were like working through this. And, you know, I think it's also like an AA saying, like one day at a time. Mm-hmm. And I think you can just like focus on the present experience. I mean, also, obviously, it's very important to like reflect on and, you know, take care of the things that happened in the past and like process your trauma, hopefully, and with like a professional, and you know, have those resources to forgive and like work through that stuff, but also being able to, you know, just like live in that present moment of like one day at a time. It doesn't need to be this like grand, you know, 10-year vision. Because when I first started, I was like, I will stop drinking until my life is worse without drinking than better. And that was like every day I evaluated, and every day I was like, my life this day is so much better than a day that I was drinking. And mm-hmm. It's like, we can like literally like shrink our need to compare like year over year, you know, 10 years, like, and just like this moment that's happening, is it what I want? You know, and then like those moments add up, like, you know, there's that saying, like, the days are long and the years are short, where I think of this last year without drinking, and like so many things happened I never imagined possible. And only when you look back are you like, oh, what changed? Where it's like, it was alcohol. Like with alcohol gone, I have unlocked myself. And I think exactly of like, can we stay alongside each other one day at a time? Can we like hold space for people one day at a time, and then help each other like celebrate as the years do tick by?
Yes. Well, Sarah, we want to close out. And actually, you're our first official guest here on Generation Cry. but if you had one piece of advice that you could give to somebody who is sober curious or in the beginning of their journey, or even something that you would have told yourself, Sarah, on day one of that 40-day experiment, what would that be?
I think it's just to like go easy, like be gentle, like treat yourself as the most precious, delicate thing. Like it's like, it's hard, right? Like things are hard. It's tough. You're like facing things you didn't want to face, you know? And it's like, take care of yourself, like sleep more, eat the nourishing things, like say no to the things you don't want to do. Like I realized that there was no way I could exist in the world the way I had been existing and also make this enormous change. And it was like, I canceled everything. It was like, clear the schedule. Like this thing that is like tending to this spark within me is the most important thing. And with that as the priority, more than work, more than other people's needs, that's where the real progress happened. You know, like I found other sober people to talk to. I like found resources. I read How to Quit Like a Woman. You know, like I found that there was this whole like culture around it, and I wasn't alone, but I only found that those resources because I was like, this is my number one priority, is stopping drinking. And like, I will, you know, get a massage. I will, you know, just like really take care of myself because it's worth it. And I think like letting yourself because I don't think it's like be like let yourself be selfish. Like I don't think selfish is the right word, but allow yourself to be a priority. Mm-hmm. And allow yourself to be a priority for as long as it takes, even if that's like, I mean, ideally it could be your whole life. Like allow yourself to be the priority, like allow yourself to let your health be the priority and, you know, treat it as the most precious thing.
Live life as if you're literally a China doll.
We are China dolls, ladies.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, we
are not special. We're that fragile.
All right, Sarah. Well,
you know.
Yeah, I know. We have had an amazing chat, and we are so grateful to have you as our official first guest. And I'm sure we'll be having you on many more times to chat about many more things, but we appreciate you so much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me. I learned truly so much. I think these conversations are amazing because I learn from you. And then as I'm talking, I help clarify things that I didn't know that I believed. And so Thank you for holding a mirror, and thank you for holding the space and for having these conversations. I think that when I was first stopping drinking, I would have loved to have heard from both of you. So thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Also, if you're ever literally in Boston, or I know Kayla's in Cali, but if you're back in the United States instead of gorgeous Barcelona, give us a holler and we will
yes. go
on a hike or to yoga or I don't know, just sit in the sun.
What a dream. We can, you know, to more soul chats, you know?
Yes.
I love it. Well, I will see you soon. I know it in my heart of hearts.
Yes, me too. I'm going to manifest it. Love it.
Yep. Vision board it. Bye, ladies.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Generation Dry, a podcast for the sober and sober curious. If you like what you've been listening to, make sure to subscribe and leave us a review. For more information about this episode, you can check out the description. And for more techniques and tips, make sure to follow us on Instagram @GenerationDryPod. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you guys next week.